Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Helping our cousins in the Middle East. The Vatican's top diplomat calls on the Church and the faithful to do more to support the rapidly disappearing Christian community in the Arab world. And we talk to Scotland's Cardinal Keith O'Brien, who's joined the highly emotional debate over gay adoption, as his country considers legalizing the practice for same-sex couples. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Tracy McClure. Stay with me for a look at those stories coming up over the next half hour. Vatican Secretary for Relations with States has called for support of Christians in the Middle East through spiritual and practical means. Archbishop Giovanni Laiolo was speaking recently at the Assembly of the Pontifical Council for the Pastoral Care of Migrants and Itinerant People. Catholics and Christians in general have found their communities rapidly dwindling away in the Middle East, suffering from discrimination and violence.
Dobbiamo dire purtroppo che c'è una grossa difficoltà, quella dell'emigrazione.
Lebanese Bishop Bishara Rai sees the pattern of Christian emigration and its worrying long-term effects firsthand. Christian families, he says, are leaving because of what has become a general economic, social, and political crisis in the Middle East. And they're fleeing from war, especially in Palestine and Iraq.
Molte famiglie e molti membri delle varie famiglie emigrano.
Now, he says, we are faced with the serious problem of the draining of Arab society of the living strength of Christians.
Stiamo affrontando il problema dello svuotamento della società araba dalle forze vive cristiane.
Well, here in Rome, Archbishop Laiolo says that living strength is being sapped across the Middle East. He cited figures for just a few countries where the downward trend is most apparent. In Iran, where Catholics once accounted for 0.1% of the population 3 decades ago, now have dropped down to 0.01%. The same trend holds true in Syria, where Catholics once were almost 3% of the population. Now they're less than 2%. And war in Iraq has forced 2/3 of Christians to leave that country. In Israel and Palestine, the situation is the same, where Catholics used to be about 2% of the population 30 years ago. Now they're about 1%. Well, Monsignor Laiolo said the whole Catholic Church must mobilize itself through diplomatic initiatives and economic measures to help Christians, as well as make society and civil law stronger, raise cultural levels through providing better training in social sciences and humanities, and improve the status of women. And here, he said, the church can provide an important contribution to train Christians and inform Muslims about the Christian faith via radio, internet, and satellite programs. I spoke with one Catholic priest who recently returned from a spiritual and fact-finding pilgrimage to the Middle East. Father Peter Stravinskas is superior of the Priestly Society of Cardinal Newman. He's also editor of The Catholic Response. I asked him how he thinks Christians in the West can support their cousins in the Middle East.
I think the whole question of reciprocity has to be pressed much more seriously. We saw here in Rome a few weeks ago a couple of cardinals going at it with each other about the question of religious education in the government schools of Italy, whether or not Islam should be taught. And to me, you know, this is stunning that we would say, oh, sure, we're going to teach Islam to the Muslim children in these schools, when in the countries of origin of these same Muslims, you could even be arrested for celebrating Mass in some of these places. And so when the second cardinal came back and said, let's talk about reciprocity in the other places, or, you know, Mussolini's famous comment that, you know, there'll be a mosque in Rome when there's a basilica in Mecca. And granted, you know, some people say, well, Christians should take the higher road. Well, theologically, that may make some sense, but we're also dealing with a political situation. And I don't think that, and while I as a Christian have an obligation to turn the other cheek personally, I don't have the right to do that collectively. And particularly when people's rights are being violated, and John the 23rd, who is of course always presented as the great advocate of peace, but he also said, one cannot vindicate the rights of others until he's first of all vindicated his own rights. And so in a purportedly democratic society where this kind of oppression is going on, and it's not just a tacit approval of it, but in many ways governmental connivance with it or agitation for it, I think that we have to say something. And the people there have to say something, but at the same time, if we take seriously this idea of the Catholic Church being a worldwide family, then we who are in a position to say something have a serious moral obligation to do everything in our power in terms of the media and governmental pressure where we are to raise the consciousness of people to these serious problems. I've always felt a serious obligation to do that, for example, when I'm in Israel. And I have seen many, many times brutal treatment of Palestinians, particularly children, on the part of Israeli soldiers and things of that nature. I don't say that simply because someone's a Palestinian, he's a saint, and the Israelis are all monsters. By no means, and God knows that's an incredibly complicated situation. But at the same time, to treat people so inhumanely, as I have personally witnessed, I immediately intervene. And at times I've been told, shut up, or we'll take care of you. And I say, oh, I'd be very happy, I said, because I am a Catholic priest, I am an American citizen, and I'm a journalist. And if you want to arrest me, I'd be very happy to go to jail. Well, immediately, of course, there's a pullback at that point. So I think that we have to be a lot more proactive in this. And I think, in a lot of those places, the Christian silence is not only deafening, but it's scandalous to the oppressors themselves, who think, we would never allow this to happen to our co-religionists. Where is the Christian voice?
When you're saying the Christian voice, you're talking about the Christians outside the Middle East.
Sure, yeah, because in many ways, they are voiceless. because they're being oppressed right now, and if they opened their mouths, God knows it would probably be far worse.
So, what would Jesus say today?
Well, you know, at times I think our images of Jesus are skewed. Yes, he's Prince of Peace, and, you know, we look at, you know, lovely little statues of the Infant of Prague, but he's also the individual who could say, you whited sepulchres, you hypocrites, stop this. And he was not afraid to confront hypocrisy and double standards and injustice wherever he found it. And we have to do the same thing. I think we have to be very careful, and particularly when I say we, in this instance, priests and bishops, that we don't toe a political line in things, that we don't take sides in a partisan type manner, but where the issues are concerned of human rights, and particularly religious freedom rights, that we have to be extremely vocal about this. And we have to move our own people in this regard.
So what, I asked him, do you say to Christians who are more interested in the spiritual side of their faith, rather than in seeking social justice for a more balanced world?
I had an interesting experience. Our community ran a parish for 3 years recently, and we have a very Vatican II approach, which is to say, liturgically we follow the books, but we're great for, you know, solemnity. So a lot of use of Gregorian chant and incense and, you know, beautiful vestments and things of that nature. And we generally wear our cassocks. And when we arrived, many of the clergy in the area were just outraged that we were there to begin with. And then we were there about 2 months, and we opened a food pantry. And some of them went to the bishop and said, "What is it with those guys? They like Latin, they wear cassocks, but they open a food pantry." As though to be of a traditional mindset would be to exclude the social component of the gospel. And you know, we see this in Pope Benedict's recent encyclical. These things go together. And Cardinal Newman, the patron of our priestly society, when he went to Birmingham and started the oratory, he started a school and he did beautiful liturgical experiences for people. But at the same time, he was down there with the Irish charwomen dealing with their social and economic problems. And so it's not an either-or situation. And when I speak to so-called conservative Catholic groups, I often say, you've given over the field of social justice to some very, very left-wing Catholics. who may have serious problems with reciting the creed, but they're doing works of justice. And Jesus says that, you know, his description of the Last Judgment, it's not going to be reciting the Nicene Creed. It's going to be, did you feed the hungry? Did you do this? And as I say, these are not on exclusive tracks. They intermingle. Because of what I believe, I do these things. And so I think that's very important for us to emphasize.
Father Peter Stravinskis, Superior of the Priestly Society of Cardinal Newman and editor of The Catholic Response. Should gay and lesbian couples be allowed to adopt children? Well, that's a question we often hear bandied about in recent years, as the topic of gay adoption has become a highly emotional issue that has sharply divided public opinion. Several Western nations like the Netherlands, Spain, Sweden, England, and Wales have already passed laws allowing gay couples to adopt children, and now Scotland is moving in that same direction. The head of the Catholic Church in Scotland is Cardinal Keith O'Brien, Archbishop of St. Andrews in Edinburgh. The Cardinal is threatening to pull out of regular consultations with the Scottish Executive or Parliament in a continuing row over plans to allow homosexual couples in Scotland to adopt children. Cardinal O'Brien told Susie Hodges that he's angry that the executive has chosen to go ahead with the legislation despite a survey which showed 89% of respondents say they oppose gay adoption.
Consultation papers have been issued and discussed by various bodies, including, of course, our own church here in Scotland, and one recently concerned the possibility of changes in the adoption process. And when this consultation did take place, it was discovered that a very high proportion of people involved in the consultation, other churches and agencies and so on, were against gay adoption. And consequently, when the Scottish Executive came out with their proposals in favour of gay adoption, well, I thought, well, what is the point of all this consultation process continuing if this is going to be ignored?
Now, you've described gay adoption as a distorted social experiment. Could you expand on that and explain why you are against it?
Basically, we know that children, and we firmly believe that children should be brought up in a stable society, in the stability of a happy family marriage. One man and one woman firmly united in the sacrament of marriage and living out their married life together. Obviously, when two gay people are living together, it's in no way like a marriage at all. And it is what I have described as a distorted experiment, approving of gay unions in the first place. And it's further distorted by allowing a gay couple, two males or two females, to adopt a child. I cannot see how children can not be affected by being brought up in such a union. Other children at school or playing or whatever will talk about their mums and dads at home. And no matter how good the two males or the two females might be at housekeeping and whatever else, the children growing up are bound to know that daddy is going to bed with another man or mummy going to bed with another woman. And it's just not what is normal, what the norm of other children will be observing in their own homes. And consequently, I have indeed described it as a distorted social experiment, yes, aimed at redefining what we've always understood as marriage and married life down through the centuries. Yes, it is a distortion to which we're subjecting young children who are in our care and awaiting adoption.
But are there really so many same-sex couples who are wanting to adopt children? It almost gives the impression that there's hordes of them queuing up to adopt kids. One would have thought anyhow that they don't represent a very large percentage of the population of couples wanting to adopt kids.
You're perfectly right in saying that. And consequently, there is no way that this small number of gay couples who might want to adopt children are going to have any great influence in reducing the numbers of children who are in care at this present time. Consequently, it seems all the more odd that the Scottish Executive, the Scottish Government here, should be planning to allow this to happen. It's not going to greatly reduce the numbers of children waiting for adoption. So why go to all the bother of passing this legislation and allowing this sort of a law to be on our statute books here in Scotland?
Do you think it's a case of political correctness just going too far?
Yeah. Yes, I think that has happened very, very considerably here in Scotland in recent years, particularly with regard to the whole issue of sexuality. When our church did speak out initially about gay unions, many, many people did say, oh, it's not the equivalent to marriage at all. It's just a civil legislation allowing people of the same sex who are living together to have their situation rectified with regard to pension rights, inheritance rights, and so on. But one thing which annoyed me and many, many others intensely, when the first male union was registered here in Scotland in the registry office, well, the two males then moved to Edinburgh Castle, to one of our holy places in the city of Edinburgh, St. Margaret's Chapel, and had their union blessed as if it was a marriage union, and the blessing taking place being given by a retired bishop in the Episcopal Church of Scotland. It was really a horrific thing to have taken place at all, and as it were indicating that this was the equivalent to marriage as we've always recognised it. I think that horrified, and similar equivalent ceremonies to marriage ceremonies just horrified people here. And they think great mistakes have been made in view of this so-called political correctness. And this proposed change in the adoption legislation is another step along that road to, as I've described it, as redefining marriage and threatening the good of society.
Do you think many people, though, might have been perhaps surprised that 89% of those who responded to the consultation prior to this decision by the Scottish Executive said they were opposed to same-sex adoption? Now, you can understand from the point of view of the churches, but this is presumably members of the public. What were they given as their reasons?
I think basically their reasons, without having read all the responses, of course, I think basically the reasons are those of the ordinary person in the street. This is not right. This is not normal. This is not what has always taken place. Children should be brought up in a family unit. And while they would agree that we should be appealing for more good couples and stable married families to adopt children, yes, of course we should. We should not allow this bizarre experiment to take place at all when, as has been said earlier on, just a very, very small number of children might be adopted in this sort of way, and similarly, that small number of children might be corrupted because of the sort of union into which they're being adopted.
It seems, though, that in many Western countries that the current of public opinion is going, at least as far as the executive or the parliaments are concerned, in the favour of legalising same-sex unions. We've seen it in a number of Western countries. Do you fear that this is now going to become a more and more common practice?
I can see the possibility of it becoming a more common practice, but that does not mean to say that it's right. We can say that 40 years ago here in this country, abortions were permitted, but that doesn't mean to say that they're right. And because the state or the legislative assembly or whatever it happens to be indicates that this is possible now, doesn't mean to say that the church has to say, of course, that's all right then. The state says it's all right. And here, our church is quite simply saying, no, this is not all right. We do not approve of gay unions being treated as equivalent to marriage. And consequently, following on from that, in no way do we approve of gay couples being allowed to adopt children. We are very firm on this, and we have stated this clearly here in opposition to what our Scottish Executive, our government here is saying in Scotland. And it doesn't matter how many countries say that this is all right. We as a church are saying, no, it's not all right.
So, I mean, the Executive is undermining family values.
Yes. And one of the things I've tried to stand up for since I was appointed a cardinal 3 years ago now is family values. And the place which family values must have in our society, the basis of the life of our country, of our nation, is the family. And in no way can we denigrate and forget the high standards which we've always had with regard to marriage and family life and go along with what common opinion or other governments or other countries might think is all right. No, we stand up very, very firmly for our families, our family values here in Scotland.
And are other churches standing alongside the Catholic Church on this issue?
Yes, a number of our other churches are. Sadly, some individuals don't seem to be taking the same stance as us. But I, myself, recently supported the moderator of the General Assembly of the Church of Scotland, the equivalent of the National Church here in Scotland. The moderator, David Lacey, Reverend David Lacey, publicly opposed homosexual adoption and called on politicians to back policies promoting marriage. And I fully endorsed his intervention at that time. I think if people do realize the teaching of the Christian Church down through the centuries and the teaching of Jesus Christ, well, we might ask ourselves, what would Jesus say about this situation at this present time? But certainly in no way should we allow and permit and go along with the tide, this tide of political correctness, allowing anything to go, anything to happen, just whatever one wants to do.
And a very warm thanks there to Cardinal Keith O'Brien, Archbishop of St. Andrews and Edinburgh. He was speaking there to my colleague, Susie Hodges. In a speech last week, Pope Benedict XVI criticized proposals to allow gay couples to adopt children. Addressing members of the Pontifical Council for the Family, the Pope lamented moves in Western countries to legalize same-sex unions by giving them the same rights as those for traditional marriages, even including the right to adopt children. And that's all we have time for today. Thanks for listening. I'm Tracy McClure. If you'd like to contact us, why not send us an email? Our address is 105live at vattiradio.va. That's 105live at vattiradio.va. And if you don't have a computer, don't worry. We like snail mail, too. Drop us a line to the English Service, Vatican Radio, Piazza Pia 3, 00120 Vatican City. Don't forget, you can also hear this and other programs produced by the English Service on our website. Just log on to 105live.vaticanradio.org. Again, thanks for listening.
You've been listening to the English program of Vatican Radio. Laudato Jesus Christus.